Then, says the report, a gentleman with a big stick in his hands and a big turban on his head, came in front of Shanti and asked if she recognized him. At the sight of him, Shanti asked Deshpande to put her down. Then she touched the feet of the turbaned gentleman with great reverence and stood aside, whispering to Deshpande Gupta, "He is my husband's older brother." Everyone was amazed. Coming out of the station, Deshpande put Shanti in an open carriage, and told the driver to follow her directions. Shanti said the road had not been tarmaced when she knew it, and she pointed out houses recently built. At a junction with two lanes, Shanti jumped from the tonga and led the way towards her house. She greeted an old Brahmin with great reverence and said, "He is my father-in-law." According to the report, the neighborhood had been informed of her coming and the lanes and nearby houses were a mass of seething humanity. A chant of the name of God went up from all lips at the sight of her greeting her father-in-law. Shanti pointed out her house. She had said in Delhi that the house was yellow, but it was a different color. In fact, the house had been rented out and repainted. When Lugdi lived there it had been yellow. Inside, Shanti pointed out where Lugdi had slept, and the room where she had kept her clothes. Two prominent gentlemen of the locality approached with the desire to test her. They asked if she could point out the Janjiri Khan. To an inhabitant of Delhi, this term is meaningless. It is used only by the Chobes of Mathura. But to the amazement of all, she descended the staircase and showed the two gentlemen the privy of the house. In the crowd, she picked out a 25-year-old man as her brother, and an older man as the brother of her father-in-law. At noon, a committee man put the child on his shoulders and asked her to show the way to another house, where she and her husband had spent most time. At the end of a lane, she got down and said, "This is my house." In the courtyard, she was reminded she had said there was a well from which she drew water to bathe. There was no well to be seen. The girl looked puzzled and grave. She put her foot on a corner of the courtyard and said, "The well was here. A slab of stone was removed from that place and the well was found." There was an even more remarkable incident when Shanti went into the room she said was her bedroom. Looking hither and thither, she finally pointed to a place on the floor and said, "My money is buried here. If the place be dug up, the money will be found." The place was accordingly opened. Under a stone, a money box was 95 found, but there was no money in it. The girl was stunned for a time, then said, "I kept my money here. Someone must have taken it." At this, Pandit Kedarnath Chobi, who was present, said, "Shanti, in your previous life you did bury the money here before going to the hospital. But you never returned. You died there. After your death, I removed the money from the box." Shanti was quite satisfied to hear this, says the report. Leading the committee towards the river Jumna, where she said she used to bathe, Shanti suddenly stopped and pointed to a house she said was the home of her parents. Saying this, she entered the house with rapid steps. There were nearly 40 or 45 men, women and children in that house. She picked out her mother and sat on her lap. Her mother embraced her warmly and began to sob aloud. Her father too was recognized and he also began to weep in a way both joyful and sorrowful. The eyes of all men who had gone with Shanti filled with tears. They said to one another, "It is better not to remember one's previous life." There were wild scenes as Shanti reached the end of her walkabout. She pointed out the cloth shop owned by the family, and, by the time she reached the bazaar, word of her tour had spread like wildfire. Most of the population had come to catch a glimpse of her. Men and women came running to see her from every side. So great was the crowd that the party became separated one from another and some of the group had their clothing torn to pieces. With great difficulty Deshpande Gupta and others took the girl away in a motor car, said the official report. The crowds were so excited that the committee and Shanti's parents refused the many requests for the girl to stay on in the town for a few days more. They got her to the train as quickly as possible. On the journey back to Delhi, Shanti became morose and tired. Shortly after boarding the train, the child fell into a deep sleep. An astonishing day was over. When the committee met, they were so sure the evidence pointed to reincarnation, they threw the inquiry open. They invited any individual or group of people who did not believe in reincarnation, such as Christians or Muslims, to question the girl for themselves, or offer any alternative explanation. No one stepped forward. 5 years later, their zealous Mr. Bose posed some pertinent questions. He asked Shanti's father, "Did you have any acquaintance or connection with the relations of her previous life? Either you or any family member?"
"Never.
We had never heard of them before. Nor did I ever have any occasion to visit Mathura." Bose sought out the witnesses of those strange scenes at Mathura. Everyone he spoke to, members of the committee and the people Shanti recognized in the street and at the railway station, confirmed the earlier version of events in every detail. He went to see the husband Chobi and asked him bluntly, "Are you sure your dead wife has been reborn as Shanti Devi?"
"Yes.
As to this, I have not the least doubt." Bose asked if this certainty was based upon the private talk Chobi had with Shanti Devi on his first visit to Delhi. He urged Chobi to tell him about this conversation. "I have not come to satisfy an idle curiosity, but in a scientific spirit to find out the truth." Chobi said, "I have not told anyone about the private talks. I am telling you now for the first time." Chobi recalled it had been about 1 o'clock in the morning. Shanti Devi's family had gone to bed, leaving him with the girl, his present wife and his son, who had fallen asleep. He asked Shanti to tell him something no one else could know, except himself and his dead wife. Shanti suggested his wife should leave the room, but Chobi said Shanti could speak freely in front of her. The girl said, "Ask me something and I'll tell you the details." Chobi recalled how Lugdi had been in great pain after gashing her foot on a piece of bone. She was treated in hospital and it was about this time their son was conceived. Chobi reminded the girl, "You could not stand erect. You had to slide about on your buttocks. Can you say how, in that condition, conception became possible?" He told Bose, "That girl of 9 years showed me the position in which it took place. And since then I have had no doubts." Bose wrote that Chobi's eyes became wet with tears as he talked about his previous wife. The researcher went back to Delhi, to see Shanti Devi, now aged 13. She told him the memories of her previous life were still as clear as if they had happened yesterday. He asked Shanti if she remembered how Lugdi had injured her foot. The girl said Lugdi Devi was a devout Hindu, and named 5 places of pilgrimage she used regularly to visit. At Harihapuri, walking barefoot 100 times around the sacred shrine, she trod on a piece of bone which caused an infection. Asked whom she had loved most in her previous life, Shanti replied, "My son." Had she been thinking of him at the time of her death? She said she had not. Bose then asked the girl what she remembered from the moment of dying as Lugdi to being reborn as Shanti. This little-known aspect of Shanti's story fits well alongside case studies of modern near-death experiences. Back in 1939, it was a remarkable interview. 96 Bose, do you remember how you felt at the time of death?
Shanti: yes.
Just before death, I felt a profound darkness and after that I saw a dazzling light. Then and there I knew I had come out of my body in the vaporous form and that I was moving upwards.
Bose, didn't you see your dead body?
Shanti: no. I didn't look in that direction.
Bose: did you feel any pain?
Shanti: I did not feel any pain. I simply passed into unconsciousness and at that very moment saw a very brilliant light.
Bose: what happened then?
Shanti: I saw that 4 men in saffron robes had come for me. They were of the same appearance. All 4 seemed to be in their teens and their appearance and dress were very bright. After going up for some time, I saw a beautiful garden, the like of which I have never seen in this world. It is beyond description. And I saw a river also.
Shanti Devi said she seemed to be the size of a thumb when she left her body.
The 4 men carried her in what looked like a rectangular cup about 10 inches across. They took her to the first plane, but there were higher levels. She saw male and female saints,
some brighter in appearance than others, and was told there was no difference between souls, such as Muslim, Christian, Hindu, etc. She said there was no feeling of time, no sun or moon, nothing like night or darkness. It was all full of light. It was very soothing, something like the light of a full moon. It was all day and light. Very mild, soothing and enlivening light. Eventually, she was told she would have to go back and be reborn in Delhi as a girl. The name of her father was mentioned and so was her address. Then she was taken to a dark room, which had a bad smell, and was made to lie down in a clean place. The descending path to rebirth was in darkness, just as the ascending path from death had been of light. Even the impassive Bose was moved to skepticism. His next question was almost a speech. Whatever we see, hear and smell is with the help of our sense organs. If I am blinded, I will not be able to see you again. Thinking is possible only because we have a brain. You said you went out of your body in a light gaseous state devoid of brain and senses. Still you could think, see things, smell things? How is it possible? Shanti, I cannot say how it is possible. I am telling you what I have experienced. There any difference between what one feels with the sense organs and what one feels without them? Shanti, yes. Without sense organs the senses become very keen. For example, with my eyes in perfect order, I cannot visualize what lies on the other side of the walls. But without a physical body and the organs of sight, I can. My sight becomes so keen that, penetrating the wall, it sees what is on the other side. And this is true of the other senses too. Bose is the child told her questioners that because of her experience as Lagdi Devi, she would never remarry. When Shanti died a few years ago, in her early 60s, she was still a spinster. And her brother told me she retained to the end her total conviction of having lived before as Lagdi Devi. She kept in touch with her previous family and was an honored guest on all their family occasions, such as birthdays, weddings and funerals. She told her brother, a few days before she died, that she was confident she would not have to be reborn again. Shanti Devi was a school teacher for most of her life. At her funeral were a few hundred friends and mourners, nothing like the thousands who fought to catch sight of her that day in the bazaar in Mathura when a little girl disturbed the thoughts of many. Another article about the same person, written by Dr. K.S. Rawat, Shanti Devi is one of the best cases of children's past life memories to ever be recorded. It was investigated by a committee of prominent citizens appointed by Mahatma Gandhi, who accompanied Shanti Devi to the village of her past life recollections and recorded what they witnessed. This article is reprinted with permission from the March, April, 1997 issue of Venture Inward magazine, the magazine of the ARE, the Edgar Case Research Organization. It was written by Dr. K.S. Rawat, a Stevenson-style researcher based in India. People hear of many cases of reincarnation these days, but in the early 30s, information about a girl born in a little-known locality of Delhi, who claimed to remember a past life, was considered great news indeed. The girl at first was known only to the local people, but gradually news of her spread all 97 over the country and finally all over the world. It was natural that the world should wonder about the authenticity of her story. Shanti Devi, born in 1926, was the subject of speculation all of her life. In 1985, questions were even raised about her existence in a special issue on reincarnation in a prominent weekly English journal of India. This dismayed me that someone would raise such doubts without conducting a proper study. In February 1986, I had gone to Delhi to meet Ian Stevenson, the leading expert in reincarnation research from the University of Virginia. Dr. Stevenson had already investigated her case, so I showed him the article. A few days later I met Shanti Devi and spent about an hour and a half with her. Later, I interviewed many people connected with the case at Delhi, Mathura, and Chipperand, including Shanti Devi's relatives in this life and from her past life as Lagdi Bai. I also examined the books and articles published on Shanti Devi from time to time. besides several reports prepared on her by eminent scholars. This is her story, perhaps the most famous reincarnation case on record. On January 18, 1902, Chaturbhuj, a resident of Mathura, was blessed with a daughter, who was named Lugdi. When Lugdi reached the age of 10, she was married to Kedarnath Chaub, a shopkeeper of the same locality. It was the second marriage for Kedarnath, as his earlier wife had died. Kedarnath Chaub owned a cloth shop in Mathura and also a branch shop at Hardwar. Lugdi was very religious and had been to several pilgrimage places at a very young age. While on one pilgrimage, she was injured in her leg for which she had to be treated, both at Mathura and later at Agra. When Lugdi became pregnant for the first time, her child was stillborn following a cesarean section. For her second pregnancy, the worried husband took her to the government hospital at Agra, where a son was born, again through a cesarean, on September 25, 1925. 9 days later, however, on October 4, Lugdi's condition deteriorated and she died. See also if these videos, Children's Past Lives explores the phenomenon of reincarnation. https://www.youtube.com/watch.v=UK/telforks/fkpa/and-previous-lives, BBC documentary https://www.youtube.com/watch.v=8qpvqa60_4. But be aware that since materialist academics have created these films, they will also always have their explanatory models with them, that there is no pattern in this and that everything is due to coincidences and imagination. 1 year, 10 months and 7 days after Lugdi's death, on December 11, 1926, Babu Rang Bahadur Mathura of Chirawala Mohulla, a small locality of Delhi, was blessed with a daughter, whom they named Shanti Devi. She was just like any other girl except that until the age of 4 she did not speak much. But when she started talking, she was a different girl. She talked about her husband and her children. She said that her husband was in Mathura where he owned a cloth shop and they had a son. She called herself Chaubeen, Chaub's wife. The parents considered it a child's fantasy and took no notice. They got worried, however, when she talked repeatedly about it and, over time, narrated a number of incidents connected with her life in Mathura with her husband. On occasions at meals, she would say, "In my house in Mathura, I ate different kinds of sweets." Sometimes when her mother was dressing her, she would tell what type of dresses she used to wear. She mentioned three distinctive features about her husband. He was fair, had a big wart on his left cheek, and wore reading glasses. She also mentioned that her husband's shop was located in front of Dwar Kadish Temple. By this time Shanti Devi was 6 years old, and her parents were perplexed and worried by such statements. The girl even gave a detailed account of her death following childbirth. They consulted their family physician, who was amazed how a little girl narrated so many details of the complicated surgical procedures. The mystery, thus, continued to deepen. The parents started thinking that these memories might have been of a past life. 98 Shanti Devi as an adult. As the girl grew older, she persisted in asking her parents to be taken to Mathura. She, however, never mentioned her husband's name up to the age of 8 or 9. It is customary in India that wives do not utter the name of their husbands. Even when specifically asked, she would blush and say that she would recognize him, if taken there, but would not say his name. One day a distant relation, Babu Bishamchand, a teacher in Ramja's high school Daryaganj in Delhi, told Shanti Devi that if she told him her husband's name, he would take her to Mathura. Lured by this offer, she whispered into his ear the name Pandit Kedarnath Chaub. Bishamchand then told her that he would arrange for the trip to Mathura after due inquiries. He wrote a letter to Pandit Kedarnath Chaub, detailing all the statements made by Shanti Devi, and asked him to visit Delhi. Kedarnath replied confirming most of her statements and suggested that one of his relatives, Pandit Kanjimal, who lived in Delhi, be allowed to meet this girl. A meeting with Kanjimal was arranged, during which Shanti Devi recognized him as her husband's cousin. She gave some details about her house in Mathura and informed him of the location where she had buried some money. When asked whether she could go by herself from the railway station to her house in Mathura, she replied in the affirmative, if they would take her there. Kanjamal was so impressed that he went to Mathura to persuade Kedarnath to visit Delhi. Kedarnath came to Delhi on November 12, 1935, with Lugdi's son Navneet Lal and his present wife. They went to Rang Bahadur's house the next day. To mislead Shanti Devi, Kanjamal introduced Kedarnath as the latter's elder brother. Shanti Devi blushed and stood on one side. Someone asked why she was blushing in front of her husband's elder brother. Shanti said in a low firm voice, "No, he is not my husband's brother. He is my husband himself." Then she addressed her mother, "Didn't I tell you that he is fair and he has a wart on the left side cheek near his ear?" She then asked her mother to prepare meals for the guests. When the mother asked what should she prepare, she said that he was fond of stuffed potato parathas and pumpkin squash. Kedarnath was dumbfounded as these were his favorite dishes. Then Kedarnath asked whether she could tell them anything unusual to establish full faith in her. Shanti replied, "Yes, there is a well in the courtyard of our house, where I used to take my bath." Shanti was emotionally overwhelmed on seeing Navneet, the son in her previous life. Tears welled in her eyes when she hugged him. She asked her mother to bring all her toys and give them to Navneet. But she was too excited to wait for her mother to act and ran to bring them. Kedarnath asked her how she had recognized Navneet as her son, when she had seen him only once as an infant before she died. Shanti explained that her son was a part of her soul and the soul is able to easily recognize this fact. After dinner, Shanti asked Kedarnath, "Why did you marry her?" referring to his present wife. "Had we not decided that you will not remarry?" Kedarnath had no reply. 99 During his stay at Delhi, Kedarnath found Shanti Devi's behavior similar to that of Lugdi in many ways. Before retiring for the night, he asked to be allowed to talk with her alone and later said that he was fully convinced that Shanti Devi was his wife Lugdi Bai because there were many things she had mentioned which no one except Lugdi could have known. Shanti Devi became upset before Kedarnath's return to Mathura on November 15. She begged to be allowed to go to Mathura with him but her parents refused. Her story spread all over the country through the media and many intellectuals got interested in it. When Mahatma Gandhi heard about it, he called Shanti Devi, talked to her, and then requested her to stay in his ashram. When I interviewed Shanti Devi in 1986, she still remembered the incident. Gandhi appointed a committee of 15 prominent people, including parliamentarians, national leaders, and members from the media, to study the case. The committee persuaded her parents to allow her to accompany them to Mathura. They left by rail with Shanti Devi on November 24, 1935. The committee's report describes some of what happened. As the train approached Mathura, she became flushed with joy and remarked that by the time they reach Mathura the doors of the temple at Warkadish would be closed. Her exact language was Kamamandak Baitband Hojeng, so typically used in Mathura. The first incident which attracted our attention on reaching Mathura happened on the platform itself. The girl was in L. Deshpande's arms. He had hardly gone 15 paces when an older man, wearing a typical Mathura dress, whom she had never met before, came in front of her, mixed in the small crowd, and paused for a while. She was asked whether she could recognize him. His presence reacted so quickly on her that she at once came down from Mr. Gupta's lap and touched the stranger's feet with deep veneration and stood aside. On inquiring, she whispered in L. Deshpande's ear that the person was her Jeth, older brother of her husband. All this was so spontaneous and natural that it left everybody stunned with surprise. The man was Babu Ram Chorby, who was really the elder brother of Kedarnath Chorby. The committee members took her in a tonga, instructing the driver to follow her directions. On the way she described the changes that had taken place since her time, which were all correct. She recognized some of the important landmarks which she had mentioned earlier without having been there. As they neared the house, she got down from the tonga and noticed an elderly person in the crowd. She immediately bowed to him and told others that he was her father-in-law, and truly it was so. When she reached the front of her house, she went in without any hesitation and was able to locate her bedroom. She also recognized many items of hers. She was tested by being asked where the jajru, lavatory, was, and she told where it was. She was asked what was meant by ketora. She correctly said that it meant paratha, a type of fried pancake. Both words are prevalent only in the chobs of Mathura and no outsider would normally know of them. Shanti then asked to be taken to her other house where she had lived with Kedarnath for several years. She guided the driver there without any difficulty. One of the committee members, Pandit Neki Ram Sharma, asked her about the well of which she had talked in Delhi. She ran in one direction, but, not finding a well there, she was confused. Even then she said with some conviction that there was a well there. Kedarnath removed a stone at that spot and, sure enough, they found a well. As for the buried money, Shanti Devi took the party to the second floor and showed them a spot where they found a flower pot but no money. The girl, however, insisted that the money was there. Kedarnath later confessed that he had taken out the money after Lugdi's death. When she was taken to her parents' home, where at first she identified her aunt as her mother, but soon corrected her mistake, she went to sit in her lap. She also recognized her father. The mother and daughter wept openly at their meeting. It was a scene which moved everybody there. Shanti Devi was then taken to Dwarkadish temple and to other places she had talked of earlier, and almost all her statements were verified to be correct. 100. The publication of the committee's report attracted worldwide attention. Many learned personalities, including saints, parapsychologists, and philosophers came to study the case, some in support and some as critics trying to prove it a hoax. I met Shanti Devi first in February 1986 and then in December 1987, and interviewed her in detail about her past life memories and her recollections at Mathura. I also interviewed her younger brother, Vyashanarain Mathura, who had accompanied her to Mathura on her first visit. Then I went to Mathura and asked her various relatives to describe when Shanti Devi first visited them at the age of 9. I also interrogated a close friend of Kedarnath who gave me some explicit information about the way Kedarnath became convinced that Shanti was actually his wife in her past life. Lugdi's brother told me that Shanti Devi, after seeing some women there, remembered her old friends and inquired about them. Similarly, Lugdi's sister informed me that Shanti Devi told a number of women folk about Lugdi having lent them some money, which they accepted as true. Shanti's emotional reactions on meeting relatives from her previous life were very significant. The manner in which she burst into tears on meeting the parents of her past life moved everyone present there. The committee mentioned in their report that it was a blessing that the past lives are forgotten. They felt that by bringing Shanti Devi to Mathura they had taken a big responsibility, and we had to forcibly separate her from the parents she had in the previous life. During my investigations, a friend of Kedarnath, 72-year-old Pandit Ramnath Chaub, told me of a very significant event, which I confirmed from other sources. When Kedarnath was in Delhi to meet Shanti Devi, he stayed at Pandit Ramnath Chaub's place for one night. Everyone had gone to retire, and only Kedarnath, his wife, his son Navneet, and Shanti were in the room. Navneet was fast asleep. Kedarnath asked Shanti that when she was suffering from arthritis and could not get up, how did she become pregnant? She described the whole process of intercourse with him, which left Kedarnath in no doubt that Shanti was his wife Lugdi in her previous life. When I mentioned this incident to Shanti Devi during my interview with her, she said, "Yes, that is what fully convinced him." Shanti Devi's case is also significant for the fact that it is one of the most thoroughly investigated cases, studied by hundreds of researchers, critics, scholars, saints, and eminent public figures from all parts of India and abroad from the mid-1930s on. One critic, Stellana Strand, when he heard of this case, came all the way from Sweden to expose the fake, as he thought it to be, but after investigation wrote, "This is the only fully explained and proven case of reincarnation there has been."